Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in southern Indiana and earned a doctorate in industrial engineering from the University of Louisville. She founded and ran a consulting practice for 20 years, specializing in creative problem solving. She then got into politics, serving in the Indiana House of Representatives for the 74th District from 2010 through 2012. Today, she's the 50th Lieutenant Governor of Indiana. Her name? Lieutenant Governor Sue Ellspermann. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Lieutenant Governor Sue Ellspermann, the 50th Lieutenant Governor in the history of Indiana. Lieutenant Governor, welcome. A real honor to have you.
Well, and it's an honor to be on your show, Jack. Thank you for this opportunity.
Can we start by talking about your mom and your dad and growing up in Ferdinand, Indiana?
Yeah, that was a big metropolis, wasn't it? No, it's a Ferdinand is 2,200 people in southern Indiana. There may be some listeners who are familiar with a park called Holiday World in southern Indiana. That is very close to where I grew up, near the Ohio River. My dad had a little jewelry store on Main Street, Ferdinand. There were six of us kids. I was four out of six. Actually, I was four in 5 years. We're a good Catholic family. So, as my sisters did, we literally grew up in the jewelry store, you know, working after school and summers and vacations and even snow days. So it was a great way to grow up, and had a wonderful farming community that really gave a great work ethic and great values.
What's the biggest thing you learned from your mom, and what's the biggest thing you learned from your dad?
Well, my mom had the capacity to just, without ever saying any of us were the most special, she just had that unconditional love, always there, always, supportive of us, but still knew that she was a parent, and, you better carry your weight at home with the tasks she put before you. My dad, I think I was really blessed being one of the few women who get to work with their dads. So every night after school, I spent 2 to 3 hours with my dad at the store, and we talked about everything under the moon. And so when I was a junior in high school and I said, Dad, I think I want to major in engineering, he was my greatest supporter, thinking that was a great idea when my own high school counselors thought I should be a teacher or a nurse or, an accountant. So I was blessed to have a very, not only as my dad, but as a business colleague, I really got to know him and the basics of entrepreneurship, of how to run a business, being there with him day in, day out, all those years.
So you worked your way through Purdue University as an engineering cooperative education student with General Motors.
Yes.
And then you came to another fabulous city, Flint, Michigan, and you went to work for AC Spark Plug in Flint.
Well, that is who I co-opted with, AC Spark Plug, which was part of General Motors. So, yes, all through college, the four out of my five sessions of co-op, I was in Flint, Michigan, worked side by side with, back then, a lot of the GMI students. You know, General Motors had a wonderful General Motors Institute, and their co-op program was one of the best in the country, and I was very blessed to have that opportunity to work in many areas of industrial engineering, in the manufacturing plants as well as in the engineering arenas, and it was a great experience. But I also took advantage in the evenings. You had Mott Community College in Flint and University of Michigan Flint, and I took classes at night as well just to make the greatest use of my time while I was there.
Tell us the role General Motors has played in a lot of these small towns throughout America.
Well, you know, certainly they're here in Indiana as well, as we share the that automotive history and industry with Michigan. You know, those plants provided so many jobs for a whole generation of workers, and cannot be understated just how important that was. And likewise, you know, as I was there in the late 70s, early 80s, it was the beginning of the change for the automotive industry. It has gone through really 30 years of reinventing itself and really becoming lean and innovative, and I give lots of credit to all those in our American automotive industry who now are producing a product that is at or higher quality of the other transplant plants that are in our state as well, for sure, and doing great job side by side. That product has come a long way, and we have an automotive industry in America that we can be so proud of, and General Motors, Ford, Chrysler are all part of that.
If there's a young lady tonight thinking about selecting engineering as a career, what would you say to her?
Well, I tell you what, I've got daughters. So my youngest is a biomedical engineer right now, completing her PhD. And, you know, I would say the possibilities are endless. And here's the thing with my own daughters. I required them to go through Women in Engineering Day at Purdue when they were in high school. And I actually took my youngest, when she was a seventh grader, to hear from young women engineers across the country that were doing cool things. They presented to these high school kids and gave them a look at what the prospects were. Well, my seventh grade daughter heard a young woman who worked for the CIA, and my daughter, with eyes as big as saucers, looked over at me and said, "Mom, if I become an engineer, I could work for the CIA?" And I said, "Kara, it opens up a lot of doors." And that's, and from there on out, she was going to become an engineer, and now she's doing her PhD in biomedical engineering. And I say that because I think often we understate. People assume if you're going to be an engineer, you're going to work behind a desk, or, you know, you're going to be doing all these calculations. You won't work with people, and it's anything but. Engineering opens a whole world of both technical and managerial opportunities. And, of course, I think I'm the only lieutenant governor in the United States that has an engineering degree, or at least woman. So it opens many, many doors, and it's the thinking skills that you learn as an engineer, the problem solving, the working through difficult projects, the complexity, working through complexity, all provides a tremendous backdrop for later in life. And in fact, 6 months ago, I was at Purdue speaking to about 500 women engineers, talking about why they needed to think about public service sometime in their career, because we need strong thinkers in our legislatures and in Congress. We need people who are problem solvers, who see different points of view, who aren't afraid of complex issues, and will work through them in a diligent, thoughtful manner. And I think that's what engineering provides, is a way of thinking through problems.
We're talking to Lieutenant Governor Sue Ellspermann. When we come back, we'll ask her how it was she started her own consulting firm in 1987. And I'm Jack Grisul, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Grisul, and we're with the Lieutenant Governor, Sue Ellspermann. 1987, you launched your own consulting firm. How and why?
Well, I was 26, going on 27 years old at the time. I was really in my dream job at Frito-Lay in Dallas, Texas, working as an industrial engineer. But what we did with our industrial engineers in Texas was we used them as facilitators with the shop floor people, with executive teams and cross-functional teams, and we were problem solvers. So if you think before the days of lean manufacturing and quality circles, we were doing that kind of work where we engaged others. And in doing that, we saved $2 billion over a five-year period for Frito-Lay. So that was the work I had decided I loved doing and hoped it would be part of my future. I trained, I facilitated, I was one of Frito-Lay's internal consultants. And then we had a baby. And then the opportunity for my husband to return to Evansville, which was our roots, or close to our roots. And it was just the right thing to do, to bring our child and return to Indiana. And Frito-Lay approached me and said, how would you like to continue working for us as a contractor, as a consultant, a few days a month? And I said, well, that's fine, but I'm not sure I want a part-time job. And then the consultant that they hired out of Canada came to me and said, how would you like to be my first colleague, again, as a consultant, helping him with other clients across North America? And pretty soon I had the basis for the beginning of a company, and I realized then I could build my practice not only on those two pieces, which of course I knew the Frito-Lay work would eventually go away, but with that colleague in Canada, and then building a client base in Indiana and the Midwest focused on this method of creative problem solving that we used, and really helping others. What I was most surprised about is that as time went on, though I worked with many large companies, culminating with Microsoft in the later years, I also had the opportunity to work with nonprofits, church groups, monasteries, you name it, many, many small organizations that needed this kind of thinking just as much as companies did. And so it taught me what an important skill set that both facilitating organizations through change, but also training their workforces to think differently, really became my passion. And that's why 2 years later, I began my PhD in this area of unstructured problem solving, ultimately in the broader field of industrial engineering. But really, how do we help people and organizations and teams work through complex, difficult, hairy issues and find the best optimal solution to the situation they find themselves in? And it's been a great journey, and I don't regret a day of it. I think back to my dad's jewelry store. That's why I had the confidence to start that practice on my own. I did learn sales, Jack. I did have to go knock on a lot of doors in those early years, but you know what? After those early years, the calls came to me. So I think when you do the work well and you serve the client well and you help them get the results that they're hoping to achieve, the work follows.
All right. 20 years you're doing this. You're successful. You've got a great reputation, a great team. And in 2010, Sue, you decide to run for political office. Some had to say, you're crazy.
Yes.
Why?
There was a small transition step in there that I had always thought that after doing a PhD, I would eventually join academia in some form. Somewhere down the way is on my bucket list. And the University of Southern Indiana approached me to found their Center for Applied Research and economic development, and that allowed me to engage 600 faculty in projects across Southwest Indiana, using that kind of problem-solving approach and helping our area of the state get stronger. And while I was doing that work, the Lieutenant Governor's office here in Indiana reached out to me to ask if I would facilitate Indiana's rural strategic plan. And as I was doing that work, traveling the state of Indiana, I realized, ooh, we have a lot of rural communities like my hometown of Ferdinand that were struggling. And as I asked a colleague, oh, my goodness, we need to do something about this, she recommended that I become part of a course called the Richard G. Lugar Excellence in Public Service Series, a program for women who are interested in public service, maybe running for elected office, but becoming more politically engaged. I knew when I heard about the description that I would apply. So I went through and got the approvals and sure enough got accepted. And at the end of that year-long program, where it wasn't about indoctrination into Republican politics, it was really about what does good public service look like at the local, county, and community level, at the state level. And we spent even a week in Washington, D.C. under Senator Lugar's wonderful leadership, but attending foreign relation hearings and meeting with embassies and learning about the behind the scenes how good public service should look. And when I came out of that series, the Indiana GOP approached me about running for the state Senate, and then really the governor, then the previous governor approached me about running for the House of Representatives because we were in the minority at that time. And so I felt it was important to step forward. But I tell you, that was the biggest shift I had to make in my thinking, because I had really never seriously thought I would run for something. I was always used to being the facilitator, where you bring groups together and let them pick the solution and move forward. People didn't even know if I was a Republican or a Democrat up to that point, because I would never show that in a session. I was the unbiased person facilitating change, bringing people together to reach consensus. So this was a big step for me. Ultimately decided it was very important for my region of Indiana and the state to pursue it, and I really was in a tough race. I was taking on a 14-year incumbent, the second highest ranking House Majority Leader, and I was blessed to come out the other side in a good way, but never left my problem-solving, consensus-building, every perspective is important kind of roots to that. And so we ran a very high integrity campaign, and at the end of the day was successful.
All right. It's the 74th district, Southern Indiana. It's very Democratic district.
Yes.
This Russ Stilwell he was a very popular legislator. The experts must have told you, you've got to run an awful campaign. You've got to really put him down. And you say, no. Negativity.
That's right. In fact, that was really the first agreement I made with the party when I ran, was that you have to understand, I mean high integrity race. We will do no mudslinging. And I don't think people heard me when I said that, or they didn't know to the degree that I meant that. But we, as a campaign, developed the 10 commandments of the campaign. The last one was that we would be proud of the race we ran, win or lose. And I, as a mother of four daughters, two stepdaughters, all in their late teens, early 20s, to me it was important that they saw how politics should be done. And I believe strongly that it's not all about winning. It's about good process. It's about working as hard as you can. And then at the end of the day, if you tell people who you are, what you've done, and what you plan to do, you let them decide. But all that said, that sounds easy now, but we thought going into that election, we knew we were 10 points down, 10 or 11 points down, 10 days out. My party walked away. We were kind of left to run the race. We wouldn't run anything negative in the district. And I will tell you that I assumed I was going to lose on election day, but I was at my polls in my most Democrat district in Linville, Indiana, thinking that's where you can turn the most votes, right? So I was there. And as people came through, I had a number of women particularly come up to me and say, thank you. And I said, thank you for what? And it was, thank you for the way you ran the race. And people, and I don't know that they were Republican. I suspect they were Democrats, and they may not have even voted for me. But I think it told me that people really appreciate high integrity. And I don't think that our parties believe that yet, but I believe it. And that night, as the results were coming in, we never were behind. We won 52-48. My opponent, Russ Stilwell, was a gentleman. He also, along the way, signed a political civility agreement with me, so he also didn't mudsling, which allowed our constituents to hear who we both were, what we had to offer, and people could make a very honest choice based on that information rather than the mudslinging that you typically have to sift through. So the real benefit was, as I won, Russ and I still have a great relationship. We're able to continue the work in many places that he had started to continue to move our district forward. I felt like it built bridges with those people who didn't vote for me, still understood that I respect them, that there's work we need to do together, that this is, once you're a representative, you represent everybody, not just your party. So I'm that's just the only way that I would ever run. And I'm trying to be a role model for that political civility to more broadly go across politics. I now have a number of politicians who are using the political civility agreement that we crafted in different ways. We still have a number who try to use it, and the other one won't use it. And, you know, I feel strongly that America is so ready for a new kind of politics, a politics that respects sharing and basing on the facts and who you are, sharing what you've done, how you're qualified, and focusing on what your commitment is in serving, how you will do that. And that should be what we put before voters.
The way it used to be. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Krasula, and we're with Lieutenant Governor Sue Ellspermann, the 50th Lieutenant Governor of Indiana. What a nice ring that has to it, Sue.
Thank you, Jack.
Within 2 years, you're in this House of Representatives, and you co-sponsor a bill, the Right to Work bill in Indiana. Why and how did it pass?
Well, understand that I also served as the vice chair of our labor committee in the state of Indiana. And in fact, I offered to be on labor. Now, usually that's not a committee that's very popular, but when the Speaker of the House saw my request that I actually wanted on the labor committee, he called me and said, "Are you sure?" And I said, "Well, wait a minute. Do you understand my background? I've worked in manufacturing. I worked in Flint and in with a UAW facility. I've worked in Dallas, Texas with Frito-Lay in manufacturing and food processing in a right-to-work state. I've worked in South Carolina for Michelin in a right-to-work state, a non-union facility versus Frito-Lay, which was a union facility. I had a lot of background in both right-to-work and non-right-to-work settings and had a good understanding because I had worked in them as a supervisor and as an engineer, understanding what it was and what it wasn't. Also understand that in 2012, we were still in the midst of some pretty bad jobs numbers, and Indiana really, looking at between 8 and 10% unemployment, had some serious work to do on the economic development fronts. We knew that employers were choosing not to come to Indiana because we were not a right-to-work state. And I knew what it was. I knew that it was right by employees. Giving them that choice was very important, and it would certainly bring many, many more jobs to Indiana. That said, it was not easy. Certainly, we were not successful in the way that Michigan was right after us, but it is important, and we see that paying off now. One of the very big reasons that Indiana is now the highest number of manufacturing jobs per capita in the nation is because of right to work. It is also one of our greatest recruiting tools for companies both to come here and to grow here. And so we are seeing it in it paying off in the jobs, which is exactly what we told our constituents. Now, I remember I represented a very Democrat-leaning district and one that wasn't sure. In fact, in surveys, my district was very 50-50. So as a legislator, I spent lots of time educating both union as well as non-union workers, constituents on what it was and what it wasn't. And really, Indiana has done extremely well. In the short run, our union membership is actually up as we've brought more jobs to Indiana. Quite a number of those are in unionized facilities. So the numbers are actually up all across the board. So it is an important choice that we give our workers, and it is certainly a strong economic development tool, which I'm sure Michigan is enjoying now as well.
Talk to us about the role entrepreneurs and small businesses play in America today.
Well, we know that most of the new job creation will be in small businesses. And under Governor Pence, he and I actually have stood up a separate agency called the Office of Small Business and Entrepreneurship, which is actually under my purview now. And it's our commitment to understanding that we need to help bring more of those startups into the state. We need to help encourage more of them at all levels, from our university entrepreneurial students. We call those young entrepreneurs. That was my first bill passed, was the Young Entrepreneur Program. But also to help encourage people of all ages to take those ideas and move them forward. And that requires some support in business planning and understanding the funding. How do you get funding and investments, and how do you work through the permitting and things? And that's what our Office of Small Business and Entrepreneurship will do. So we're really trying to create or recreate that culture of entrepreneurism that was here in the Midwest for many, many years. As we got bigger, as our manufacturing plants got bigger and there were so many opportunities for people to go to work there, there was less of a desire and risk-taking to do entrepreneurship, which you and I know it is very much. Starting your own business is a big risk. But I believe, and I suspect you would agree with me, that there's nothing more satisfying at the end of the day than to start and own your own business and help grow it and see the difference you can make in it and have the control of what, where will we take this? How will we grow it? What difference will we make? So we're very pro small business in Indiana, and we see it as a very important part of the future, and I will say a critical part of the future in our smaller communities if they're going to thrive moving forward.
Since January of 2013, Sue Ellsperman, you've served as the 50th Lieutenant Governor of Indiana. What does a Lieutenant Governor do every day?
Well, in Indiana, we've got a pretty large portfolio. So, of course, I preside over the Senate. Many lieutenant governors do. So that takes me through our session. We have a long and a short session over the two-year period. But I also am statutorily the Secretary of Agriculture and Rural Affairs, which fits me very well growing up in that little town of Ferdinand. Though I say I wasn't a farmer, I certainly knew the key premise that my dad told me working at the jewelry store: if the farmers don't have a good year, we won't have a good year. So I understand the importance of agriculture and rural to the entire state, and I oversee then six agencies, two of those related to our State Department of Agriculture and Office of Community and Rural Affairs. I already mentioned Office of Small Business and Entrepreneurship. I also oversee Housing and Community Development Authority, Tourism, Office of Defense Development as well.
We're talking to Lieutenant Governor Sue Ellsperman, and I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to a most amazing lady, the Lieutenant Governor of Indiana, Sue Ellsperman. Sue, the last four lieutenant governors in Indiana have been ladies.
We like that trend.
Maybe that's the reason for the terrific economic turnaround in the state of Indiana, if the truth be known.
Maybe.
Talk to us about your boss, Governor Mike Pence.
A fabulous person, highest integrity, great conservative leader. He is following in the footsteps of a very fine governor before him, Governor Mitch Daniels. Governor Pence is just, he's big ideas. We came into office our first month. Our theme has been good to great. So we are challenging. He is challenging us every day to get better at what we do. We are taking our economic development efforts, our education efforts, workforce efforts, all to new and higher levels. And so we're very blessed in Indiana to have that kind of leader who really does put Hoosiers first and is focused on helping our state grow and thrive.
What did running a consulting firm for 20 years teach you about being a lieutenant governor?
Well, you know, there I'm not sure, because I have to tell you that when he was vetting me for lieutenant governor, I was pretty upfront that I'm not very good with bosses. So being number two is tough. You know, when you're used to running your own business, you're used to making the final call. Now, that said, it's been an absolute joy working with Governor Pence, and certainly I would say the consulting business, working with the wide range. I always thought as a consultant I worked with the widest range of problems that are out there, until I came into state government and I realized there are many more problems that I had just never seen before. So I think the being used to coming into situations where you've really got to wrap your arms around, do some fact-finding, define the problems, identify potential solutions, gain consensus, move them forward, is very, very helpful. And I think maybe the biggest strength is, from my background, is the desire to work towards consensus. Because whenever we can bipartisanly, support change and solutions, we are better off. We are able to implement them more strongly. We have people on board, and we make a bigger difference. So I'm one that really firmly believes, and this tends to be a female thing as well. We know that female legislators generally have more, research shows they have more authors on bills than traditional, men. So we believe that it's stronger when we can come to consensus and work together. And that's something that I've worked very hard to bring into my office, to bring different points of view together, to try to work through the challenges we have administratively, and then when necessary, and only when necessary, to do that legislatively.
Sue Ellspermann, talk to us, if you will, about a career in public service today.
Well, I think it's incredibly important that if one thing that people take away, and I hope there are young men, young women, young minorities all listening to this, we need to attract a wide range of talent to running for local, state, and federal elected positions. We need more non-lawyers. We need more engineers. We need more school teachers. We need more of every other walk of life, every perspective, so that as we craft legislation, as we craft these statutes that are going to go into effect, we understand from those who are engaged at all those different levels what will work, what will probably not, and we understand the unforeseen consequences of what we're doing. And, you know, I think that is, I say the younger, because I call us the graybeards. We're the ones that have been around a long time. The military uses that term, graybeards. We've been here as baby boomers. We have run this country and our states and our communities a long time. We need now to be stepping back and leaving room for that next generation, those millennials that are coming along, and give them the opportunity to lead. And it's our job to mentor them along. So I'm hopeful that many of those who have great careers going will be willing to do what I did. You know, I had many people question me when I left my great career and went into public service. And in fact, I'm still making less today than I was in my previous jobs. But it's important that our country's founders saw this country being led by people like all of us, not professional politicians. And so we really need to be willing to step forward. And for some of us, that'll come at different times in our lives. I understand that. But when you're tapped on the shoulder, you're asked to lead, you're asked to step in, to run for office, please say yes, because that's a sign that we really need your thinking. We need your leadership at the table.
Lieutenant Governor, tell us about public service workers and all the good they do behind the scenes that we never hear about.
Well, I tell you what, as I've now come into the executive branch of state government and I get to work day by day, side by side with our state employees, I am so impressed by the talent that we have and the commitment of those individuals to serve Hoosiers in our state, and I'm sure it's the same in the state of Michigan, but to serve the people for whom they're responsible, whether it's a program or an agency in which they work. And it's very important work. And you know what? It will probably never pay what the private sector does. And I don't apologize for that. I believe the private sector needs to be strong. That said, we need people who want to serve, who are willing to serve. And I hope that they will spend time on the that they will actually spend time in both the private sector and the public sector, because I think that's where we learn what is the role of government, when is government getting too big, what are those things that government can do and must do with and for those they serve, and which things should government not be involved in and should be left to the private sector. So as a conservative, of course, I believe in small government. And I also think it's about making sure that we are asking those who are best poised to solve those problems to be engaged in them.
Lieutenant Governor, is the American dream still alive today?
Well, I certainly think this is the greatest country in the world. I happen to believe I live in the greatest state in the country, but I think that's really up to us. And we have to give room as elected officials. We have to make sure that our policies allow that American dream to thrive. We have to do everything with our education systems to ensure our young people are prepared to thrive and participate in that American dream. And then I think at the end of the day, we need to get out of the way and let it happen. So here in Indiana, we've seen great things. Our business climate has never been better or stronger. Our education is moving in great directions, where we are really getting to a place where I think Hoosiers, young and old, are just going to have all the opportunities that they want to seek. Our job is, quite honestly, make sure we're a state where those individuals choose to invest their future. And that's another part of my message out there to young people, is they're going to have choices to go anywhere in the world to apply their talents. We need to tell them that we hope that they will apply their talents here in Indiana, in our communities, large and small, across the state. When I was young, my dad said to all six of us, go out and do big things. And we did. And by the way, we all left Indiana. That was not maybe the best thing for Indiana, right? So I want to make sure that we're giving the message that we want this young talent to do big things, but you can do it right here in Indiana, and you can do it in a small town or large town right here.
Lieutenant Governor Sue Elsperman, listening to you, observing you, meeting you, gives all of us hope for the future of this country. Please keep up the great work.
Thank you, Jack.
Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spoon. Believe